Hello and welcome to the ILC Home webinar series. My name's Alan Souter. I'm the chair of ILC. I'm delighted to welcome you along. First of all, I guess a huge big thanks to our home corporate partners, that's Carpenters, CoreLogic, Innovation Group and ICAP. Really pleased to have your support, but even more pleased to have you listening along with us for something that I hope will be helpful to everybody who works in home claims. The idea of the podcast series is to chat to a few people, understand a few more of the areas that home claims get involved in, hopefully some entertaining stories as well as very informative ones. Very important that you give us any feedback, so please just give me a note at alan@iloveclaims.com. Be delighted to hear from you. But before anything else, let's listen to this week's podcast. In today's podcast, we are going to take a look at operations and communication. I'm delighted to say we have got a fantastic panel with us today. We're going to look at what the challenges are currently. Have they moved on a little bit? We're going to see what's changing. We're hopefully going to take a look at some good stories as well. Things that will cheer us up, perhaps who our favourite or cheeriest colleague is. What's the learning and what's happening in the claims community? So that's going to happen over the next 30 minutes or so. Delighted to have a great panel today, it really is. I've got Connie Beasley, the head of home claims at Legal & General. She'll probably tell you a bit about what she does, as they all will in their first chance to speak. Jennifer Green, property claims operations manager at Ageas. Welcome to Jennifer. And Heather Lambert, the sales director at Claims Consortium Group. Heather will get a balance between operations and actually trying to make sure that the relationship between the operations of the supplier and the operation of the insurer can blend together as it changes. Anyway, great panel. We've been going through a really tough time. I think this is the 20th broadcast that we've done in the home side of ILC. We've dealt with a lot of things, but today we're going to take a look at, as I said, what's happening, some of the good stuff, some of the difficulties. So I guess most of all, thanks to you all for listening and tuning in again. I will plug later on or halfway through some of our events going on. So let's start immediately. I'm going to go to Connie and say, Connie, since you last appeared with us on a webinar, I think about 4 weeks into the initial lockdown, what's changing? Are the challenges the same? Are they different? Or are they moving all the time?
So the challenges remain meeting customer service, as always. It has got more or less back to business as usual from notification of claims and customer demand. So keeping our people motivated and engaged whilst they're still working from home. We still have a large contingent of our people working from home. Almost 90% of our people are still working from home. And we have started a small pilot. I'm in the office today of a handful of people working in the office, just trying out the environment and making sure it's safe. So it's pulling on our people to be able to come back to the office, but within the regulations and the restrictions that we have on public transport and all of that kind of thing. So it's keeping different plates spinning, but I'm still having plenty of meetings about laptops, would you believe? So lots of challenges with IT.
Okay, but is Will still travelling around the country depositing laptops, or have we found him something else to do?
No, bless him. Will has been relegated. We now have an official person that we're employing, someone from within the family that's delivering all our equipment for us. So we've been out delivering not only laptops but SIM cards for poor internet reception areas, headsets, tables, chairs, all sorts of things. So we've actually got an official person that knows how to do these things for us. So that's great. Although not to say that Will and Simon Hurd didn't do a valiant job with deliveries. They really kept the lights on, so to speak, at the time.
I think it actually speaks volumes for both of them and the jobs that they do to find time to go. Ooh. That was fantastic. Jennifer, what about you? We haven't heard much from Ageas in the series of this so far, so delighted to have you here. What are the current challenges facing you in the operational side of Ageas?
Yeah, and I think to echo Connie's point, they've sort of they've stayed the same, but they're slightly different from sort of the early stages, which was around that remote mobilisation of our people, getting the immediate sort of day one kit requirements out to them, and actually for our leadership team, a lot of learning for our leaders around, oh, actually, now I can't see my people. How do I lead remotely? What does that look like? How do I communicate? What's the content of that communication? How much of it's structured and unstructured? And you touched on around keeping people motivated in kind of times of crisis when the chips are down. We default to providing sugary donuts and coffee runs. Yeah. And actually, that's really hard to do when you might be, you know, anywhere from sort of 30, 50 miles away from your people. So some of the kind of tricks of the trade aren't available to our people in this remote environment. So it's sort of adapting to that, learning what's working as we adjust to what I suppose was anticipated as a reactive position in COVID, which now seems much more sort of longer tail than we might have anticipated. I think what we thought was going to be sort of 3-4 weeks is now sort of 3-4 months, and actually may well bleed now into 2021. So it's sort of spotting now and learning and calling out as we've dealt with the immediate urgency of the situation operationally to actually how do we now stabilise, how do we refine, how do we finesse, how do we spot. So it's an ever-evolving piece, but it's been exceptionally busy, and it is exceptionally busy. That the benefits of sort of workloads that we had in the early days and sort of less peril-type claims than we would maybe typically see has now sort of returned to pre-sort of COVID levels, and actually we're seeing an accelerant on some other perils. So that sort of operational busy landscape hasn't changed, but yet we're actually all working very differently. So all manner of things. My to-do list and meeting calendar looks very different now to what it looked like 3-4 months ago. You know, the subject matters are different.
Yeah. It is, and it's a really good insight. And just before we go any further, though, because I know Connie and Heather and everybody listening to this want to ask, what happens to the excess donuts? Who gets them? You know,
well, they don't get bought, do they? I have to say, I've been back on the office. This will be the third week, and we've had donuts every week. There's been an abundance of donuts. So from a calorie counting point of view, it doesn't help when you've got a Krispy Kreme just around the corner. It's not good.
Heather, just good points we're both making. And Jennifer was clear then in some of the things that are moving as we get along. You know, all of a sudden perils moving, ones expected that hadn't moved, ones that we hadn't expected. How do you, in terms of client relationships, keep the changing face of what's going on within your clients and make sure that you guys are ready to reflect it back in your own operational centres?
Yeah, I mean, obviously we've experienced some of the same challenges that Jen and Connie have just shared. But in terms of sort of sales and account management and the client relationships, I would say as a business, our claim volumes obviously dropped dramatically as it has across the industry. For us as a team, however, despite the volumes falling, the conversations with our clients, including Connie and Jenny and both of their teams, obviously, actually have sort of ramped up quite a lot from day one of lockdown and continued to increase. You know, on the same vein, mainly because the activity that we've been sharing is around actions that we've taken as a business. Obviously, we implemented our BCP initially, as did our clients. So we were sharing some of the actions that we were taking on there. We were clearly just coming out of surge, so we're also continuing to share updates on some of those individual claims that actually through lockdown obviously had to go on hold for obvious reasons that have been spoken about previously. So the relationship piece has been a really key part of our business over the last 5 months. Obviously some of the challenges around that have been that we haven't been able to meet face to face, which as a team is pretty much what we do all of the time. So we've adapted through Microsoft Teams, through Zoom, through any video conferencing methods. The strange thing, I think, for me now is that actually having just a normal telephone conversation feels really weird. Pretty much 99.9% of all of our client communications have been through video conference, you know, where I say we can't meet face to face. So that has been a challenge for the team. You know, you're also seeing into people's homes when you're holding those conversations with clients. And for people that you know really well, then clearly that's great. For some people that you know less well, at the very start, it felt a little bit like you were in those individuals' homes. Mm-hmm. I think it's allowed us to get to know our clients much, much better, and to build those relationships, you know, continue to build on those. So, yeah, as a team specifically, we've probably had slightly different challenges. You know, we've obviously, as a business, we've managed our in tandem with our claim volumes. For us, I probably could have done with quite a few more people in sales and account management to help with those additional communications. Yeah, slightly different challenges. I say one of the great things, it's been talked about here, in terms of IT, Tom Burrows and his team have done a fantastic job. We pretty much moved as a business. Probably within 24 to 48 hours, everybody was working from home. So obviously the challenge was the drop in volumes, claim volumes, but actually a real positive that everybody was up and working very, very quickly. And, you know, they've adapted well to that. So some of that is now changing because we've been in lockdown for 5 months. And, you know, some individuals, it works really well for them and suits their family circumstances better. I think for some other individuals, we're probably approaching a time scale now where you know, we're obviously talking to our people as we speak now just to see who would like to come back into the office, but we're not proactively doing that quickly. It's just more of, you know, for some people it would be better if they could come back into the office, and we're making arrangements to see how that would work, what the offices look like. So that process is now underway as well. Yeah. Now, some similar challenges, but then, you know, some slightly different ones from a sales perspective.
It's quite amazing, isn't it? But like what people have done. I mean, I was talking with, on previous trips here, we've had, I think it was Martin Aldroyd in accommodation. So they're not a big company, they're a small company, but they were able to move everybody out and home within 24 to 48 hours. And along with other suppliers, Tim Goodman and Martin had this long discussion about how they were all able to move people out of hotels quickly, not the staff, clearly, but people to accommodation. So some of the reactions we've had from everybody in the industry have been fantastic. But, Connie, as we look forward, to give you the next tough question, as we look forward and what might change, on the horizon could be a subside surge of some size. We're not quite sure. I'm trying to cheer you up here. I talked about cheering. So we could have a subsidence. We do get floods sometimes in the...
We do.
Sometimes.
And we've got the viability of some suppliers, not necessarily small, but some of the smaller suppliers, viability, certainly contractual stuff of continuing the insurance record. How easily are you going to be able to cope? I know a lot of this lies with supplier management people, but the effect comes back in operational issues directly into the claims departments and the difficulty of securing the right volumes and getting the right repairs to whatever is wrong. How do you think we're going to be able to deal with that over the unknown coming few months?
So what, responding to customers' demand and their claims? Well, as you say, it's very much under control from Will's team, particularly for us. We have an absolute clear line of sight of all our customers that are in the supply chain process, the customers that are in repair, when those repairs are starting, the demand on our supply chain in respect of responding to those customers, and the queue that could potentially come from that. So the first off is to be informed. That's exactly where we need to be. We know the claims that we've got open. We know the claims that are in flight. So the control will come from the knowledge and the information that we have, and just keeping in touch with customers. So one of the things that the strategies that we did was we ensured that our complex and technical teams had the equipment that they needed to keep in touch with customers. We were we've got quite a presence in Fish Lake in the Doncaster floods, unfortunately. But it does mean that we have a very clear line of sight on how those repairs are going and how our contractors are performing in that particular village. So it's more of the same. It's just keeping an eye on the flood claims, keeping an eye on these subsidence claims as they develop. But it's knowledge is power there, and keeping in touch with customers.
Jennifer, how do you then manage an operational claims department through what is completely unknown? I mean, one, where we're unknown and how you've managed to move over the last 4 to 5 months, but then moving forward without really knowing. I mean, I've just, funnily enough, since we've come on, I've just read, so we're recording this a couple of days earlier, they've just locked down Aberdeen. So all the pubs and restaurants in Aberdeen to shut. So we had the issues changing in Manchester last week. So it must be absolutely enormously hard to plan for what's going to come in and out. Well, things are just changing on a daily basis. And you have got this background that there could be a surge in subsidence or whatever is going to come. So how do you keep your staff and your teams ready? How do you keep yourself ready for that level and anything else?
Yeah, I mean, it is a challenge. I think the changing landscape linked to COVID, and in particular that dynamic environment around what's the impact of local lockdowns. You know, we're getting that same information at the time as Joe Public, and so, you know, being able to get ahead of that is a challenge. But like all insurers, no doubt, that sort of future planning, that identifying the current and the emerging risks that are likely to face the customers, the claim journey. It's working with our wider support teams, so and our solution network partners to say, okay, well, what's your mitigation? What plans do you have in place? And all of us really being quite upfront and transparent with those plans. But at the same time, not being, I guess, unrealistic with the expectations and demands. You know, there are constraints that come with those dynamic changing circumstances. And there are things that we will be able to do, but there will also be things that we won't be able to do. Mm. And so relying on kind of data, planning as much as we can with those risks and mitigations that we can identify, and just working really collaboratively with our internal teams and our wider teams. And obviously for Ageas, you know, we've got a multi-channel book. So we've got partnership claims, you know, we've got our direct claims, we've got our broker claims. And so the communication tone and content and medium that we use is very different depending on that channel. So that also presents another challenge for us. But, you know, it's a really interesting landscape. And if you're in operations, it brings that that pace, that reactive nature, that problem-solving skills that, you know, we all have right to the fore. So, you know, I would say that we're operating certainly at our best at the moment because we're juggling all those different balls and trying to get ahead and anticipate those challenges. But good risk identification mitigation is key for us for the next few months, and just being agile and dynamic, which is, you know, what we have evidenced to date that we're very good at.
Again, I think that's a fantastic, shown some fantastic ability throughout the claims sector to do that. And I think it probably surprised a few people. I certainly know one supplier that surprised themselves with their ability to be as flexible and as fleet of foot as well, which is terrific. Heather, it's slightly different with you. Are you like a claims management company are kind of in the middle? So you've got to take the issues and all this unknown in terms of the demand and supply you've got to provide, and then have the same thing for the demand and supply from you down to the people who are going to help resolve the claim manually on behalf of your clients. How do you deal with kind of managing that middle role?
I think both Jen and Connie have talked about this themselves. The key thing for us as a business is to make sure that we continue to have that open dialogue with our clients in the first instance so that we understand, you know, what may be expected in terms of claim volume, so we can align ourselves closely to that. Appreciate that some of that, as has already been said, is a bit of an unknown quantity. And then aside from that, you know, the key thing for us is the service that we're delivering to our clients' customers. And as part of that, the key thing for me is that we need to continue to make sure that we're sharing those messages and keeping those customers up to date. Obviously, as lockdown is changing, we've already said there are some geographical changes. So the impact is different to different customers. And where we can resolve our customers' claims, then clearly we are doing that. We've adapted really, really well in terms of the versatility of how we've provided solutions to customers. We've worked closely with clients, moving to more virtual validation to enable those claims to be settled quite quickly. And obviously that takes different resources than somebody attending a customer's property. So we have adapted really well in terms of our resources and the flexibility to what we've needed to do. Jen also mentioned the data aspect. For us, that's really key to help us manage our business and obviously provide that service to clients and customers. One of the things that we have access to, which is fantastic, is the customer data in terms of, you know, progress of those claims. In particular, where we started to see some locations going into lockdown or being on warning for lockdown, what we're able to do is identify those customers or those areas, first of all, to understand what that likely impact to those customers who already have an open claim with us and what that impact will be. So in terms of time scales of handling those claims through to conclusion and or if we're, you know, the availability of those types of materials, if customers are still shielding, lots of different aspects of those claims. With that extra data, we can pretty much capture whatever we need to through that claims journey. And by sharing that with our clients, keeping clients up to date, I think that just helps in terms of managing, you know, expectations across all stakeholders, really. So, yeah, the data for us and the communication piece, I would say, certainly for the sales and account management team, is absolutely key.
It is interesting. We will, when we announce in the probably next week or week after, what we're going to do about a home conference, how we're going to run that this year. Analytics and stuff like that are becoming more and more important, and so much even in forecasting, which is obviously very important. But I think, as you point out, and being able to identify what claims you've got all of a sudden in an area which might be proving difficult or might be, which is great. So, anyway, let me just move on to the next one. In all of this, we'll stop people for a minute. Connie, thought Connie disappeared for a second.
I lost you there for a second.
Yeah, it probably was.
Sorry, me. Alan.
Said my internet was unstable. There you go. The risks of all of this. Connie, tell me. I'd like some good stories. So let's start with which colleague has cheered you up the most? I know there's been we've all talked about lots of good stories that come out of this, and of course they do. But tell me, who's the person that's cheered you up the most? Don't include me.
Well, I've got a fantastic team around me. So I have to say my direct reports, Salma, Emily and Dave, call out to them because they keep me sane in amongst the daily grind of, constant conversations about our people and our service. I think my husband, whilst I was at home, bless him, has basically said to me, I'm glad you're going back to the office because I don't want to hear about ASU anymore. I've heard so much about it and I don't know what it is. So that was always quite amusing. But from for the audience, I suppose, and for us here, the person that does always bring a smile to my face is Steve Foster. He is an absolute star, so I don't get to necessarily speak to him as often as I'd like because he's not one of my people. But we had an exchange this morning and a cheeky reprimand on myself for not replying to a voicemail as quickly as he would have liked. So, yeah, he always cheers me up.
Steve Post, who has also been on one of our webinars.
He has, hasn't he? Yeah.
I'm not going to stick up for your husband at the moment because I realise actually outnumbered today. Okay, Jennifer, which of your colleagues has cheered you up the most and any good stories you've got that come out of this?
Yeah, I sort of struggle to identify an individual, and I don't know if that's a good or a bad thing. but I guess when I was thinking about this in the kind of a functional area perspective, two sort of standouts for me really was really our comms team working with our HR teams. And the reason they sort of stood out and they sort of cheered me up was they picked up a lot of the quite difficult messaging internally for our people and communicated it in a way which I guess gave confidence and reassurance, and that was sort of quite difficult content around pay, you know, people that were at home and couldn't work, you know, having to put a framework and some governance and some guidance together for those people in a time of huge uncertainty. And, you know, that was a bit, they weren't always positive messages, but they were clear messages and they kind of tackled some of those difficult questions that people had. And so in some ways that cheered me up because it meant I didn't have to think about those conversations or make those decisions. Because I felt like I was making lots of other ones, but you know, they did a sterling job, and then working with our comms team to kind of translate those messages to the internal audience and to the external audience. So you know, they were fantastic, and really for me came into their own and sort of elevated their contribution beyond kind of the individual day-to-day humdrum type stuff that we just do, to really you know, responding on such a scale and some, you know, unprecedented times, to tackle and make decisions and communicate some of those messages. So for me, you know, the diversity of those messaging, the breadth of those messages, the tailoring to the audience, and the inclusion, you know, responding to the FAQs and the feedback loops and the, you know, the granularity of that, phenomenal. And I see it, you know, it's still continuing and really changing up where our staff seek engagement, you know, how much they value those messaging channels now more than they've ever done, you know. And an example is, you know, almost 95% of our people are using our kind of Facebook workplace page in our organization for all sorts of updates now. And you know, that was sort of that was a tough switch in communication for our organization, because not everybody wants to necessarily use those sort of social media type platforms, but due to the COVID and the shift in remote working, people have migrated to that channel and have found real value, because you know, the communications and that coordination has been excellent.
Yeah, I think the flexibility being shown throughout people in the industry has seen things, insurance claims move faster than it probably has for a long, long, long time. I think it was Ian Marsh Saga, who's the Saga underwriters, explaining to us how the policyholders, when they were claiming, far bigger percentage they ever imagined were getting into virtual validation and things that perhaps they underestimated. Certainly the amount that would. So we've seen a lot of good change from within and ability to deal with the client. Heather, over to you then. Who's cheered you up? And I might question a few of the names you might use, but we'll wait and see. Who's cheered you up? Stories that you've come across at Claims Consortium Group?
Well, my team have been absolutely fantastic. So Mark, Neil, Gemma, Victoria, Rob and Ian, they have all been absolutely fantastic. Because as I mentioned earlier, we literally went from, you know, being extremely through surge into something sort of 10 times the amount of communication that we've been doing previously, and everybody just literally upped their game. We repurposed as a team. So the team themselves, you know, we've probably all had our really great days and then not so good days. So everybody's cheered everybody up. In the early stages, we were having a catch-up call as a team every single day for half an hour until we actually felt we didn't need to do that anymore and we moved that to weekly. So the team themselves have been fantastic. I obviously have to give them a mention because they are a fantastic team. But there are two individuals, a bit like Jen, I can't really pick one out and single one out. And they are both actually from our technology area, from IT. So the two individuals, James Burns, whenever you talk to him, any conversation I have, He's always upbeat. He's always got something great to say. But the bit that just tops it off nicely is, you know, through this challenging time, there has been lots of requirements on our technology team, lots of changes, getting everybody set up at home. And James would always provide us with a daily update just on what's happening, next steps, just so everybody knew, you know, what the next phases were, any challenges, who to speak to. And always on that email is a reference to music and a song for the day. So with a link attached to it, so you can always click on, even if you just listen to it for 5 seconds, and there's always something in there that's relevant to that day, which is absolutely brilliant. So he would be my first one. The second one, also within technology, is Tim Norman, who has done a fantastic job with the rest of the team, I have to say, in terms of sort of bringing our plans for 2021 forward, in terms of transformation on the technology piece that we have been working on. But with everything that's happened, you mentioned it earlier, Alan, the virtual validation, it's allowed us really to bring all those plans forward. Mm. And Tim's been fantastic in demonstrations that we've shared with clients, adapting really well to our client personalities, you know, not having been interfacing with those individuals. So both of them for me have done a great job and always have something fun to say. So been great to work with, much more closely over these last 5 months.
That's great. I mean, there's been a lot. I certainly know that the people that we talk to at ILC, you know, is broader than most other organisations do this thing. So over the 20 broadcasts we've done so far, I've been cheered up by a whole load of people because they come from all areas, suppliers, different levels of insurers, people that are out on the road every day, people that, they're not just three powerful, like you three powerful women here, who, you know, have a lot of issues to deal with day to day. I don't like anything else. We, you know, in my own business, I'm obviously a bit of a loner, but in the ILC business, we've had unbelievable support from Rachel and Eleanor, who all of a sudden have had to help us do things on a weekly basis that we didn't used to do. So I think it's been great to stuff. People have really done well and hopefully learned a lot. So let's then turn around and say, okay, you know, what are the big things? If I had to say to you, name me, and I never asked you this question beforehand, so you can think really quickly, so we'll get Connie first.
Thanks.
One of the two things you think you've really learned for you and the claims community over the last 4 months?
Do you know, I think it's got to be self-reflection. It's a claims people adapt, and it's part of the breed that we are. We're very quick to react and respond to situations. So you put a claims team in an unusual environment or extraordinary environment, and they just step up to the mark without an absolute shadow of doubt. I mean, to be fair, they've been supported by HR and IT in building the capability, but just that people are just great, and you will ask them to go the extra mile, and they will. So from my perspective, it's learning more about the team through the different ways of communicating, leading in a very different way, is the communication and speaking to the team and reaching out to them. When you run a contact center that is so large and you can't afford to take people away from the front end, from the telephone, from their work, then it's super important to find another way to reach out to them. And that's what I've learned. I've learned that the personal touch, the communicating with a large group of people quickly and swiftly, and they really appreciate it. The emails that I get after I've done one of my video logs or just all of that kind of thing, it's just the resilience of people and the community that has built up, and how much I've got to know our team on a different level, and being, as Heather mentioned earlier, being in people's homes is kind of intrusive, but it just gives you an extra depth to the personality. I've met so many dogs and so many children over the course of lockdown. It's been unbelievable, but it's so lovely to just have a little chat with a child whilst you're trying to work out what's happening on this particular claim or this particular issue. Why not? It's just lovely. The thing that I've missed the most about and how we've learned to adapt to this is the support network of the team and the human element. So within an office environment, you will always celebrate marriages, births and help people deal with deaths, because it does happen, and it's happened when we've been in lockdown. But the joy of welcoming the births and people's new babies to the family that is the family of claims and the community through photos and through video links has just been wonderful, absolutely wonderful.
It's a nice story.
Oh, giving me a lump in my throat, Connie.
Oh, I know, it's great.
Oh, Jennifer, remove the lump in your throat because it's your turn, right? What are the things that you think you've learned about yourself and the claims community over the last few months?
Yeah, I mean, I echo absolutely everything Connie just said. And I think if you've sort of worked in claims as long as we have, although I know we don't look like we've worked in claims as long as we have, but...
well said. You know,
good one. I'm saying
and no one can validate that because they can't see us, but...
we hope.
Know, it is a people area of claims. And I think the biggest thing for me is... that extension of trust. And when we talk about trust, really trusting our frontline people, you know, we say we do, and we discharge a lot of that responsibility and autonomy to our teams, you know, and they've got really diverse and responsible roles. But it's really challenged us to extend that trust and accelerate some of our thinking around, you know, our frontline 18-year-old handlers can work from home just as well as our, you know, our more experienced teams that work in our finance or our support functions. So that discharging of trust and I guess a bit of a new leap of faith that we've taken, that we've almost been forced into or accelerated on in the crisis. And actually that trust has been proven. You know, our people have responded and they've worked well and they've worked effectively. And I guess, you know, also COVID has allowed us to kind of test some stuff that we wouldn't ordinarily have been ready to do. So, for example, we've been onboarding new starters remotely. Now, that would have almost been unheard of pre-crisis, where, you know, we've got to bring them in, they've got to be in the training room, the training program needs to look like this. You know, we've had to really challenge our thinking and modify and redesign our content so that it can be digitally enabled, consider how we engage on certain parts of the programme, overcome some of our, whether they're myth busts around our compliance constraints and our kit constraints, I should say. So it's really sort of created, I guess, some new opportunities for test and learn type environments that we might have got to, but we might not have got to as quickly and on the same scale. So, sort of test and learn opportunities and a true extension of trust where we, you know, we knew we had good people, we knew they were able, but we've kind of given them the freedom and the autonomy to do that in a very unique circumstance. And they've proven us, you know, they've proven that trust is rightly discharged.
Of course, that's, you know, increasingly as we talk about it, what we have achieved. Somebody the other day, looking, as I said earlier, at what we achieved, and some of the stuff we have done is absolutely phenomenal. If I'd said to you what you were going to do now, if I told you what you'd done now, and I'd said that in January or February, I don't think you'd have thought it was true, but well done to everybody for that. Heather, what about you? What have you learned about yourself and the claims community over this?
I probably couldn't reinforce enough what Jen and Connie have just said in terms of the people aspect. You know, our people are really important, the most important thing really of the business. And that's what we've tried to focus on. I think sometimes if I know it's a bit of a cheesy statement, if you look after the people take care of the business and the clients and the customers, and I think that is absolutely true. I also think that through this difficult and challenging time, and to your point, Alan, would you think that people could have delivered what they have delivered? And I think people are very resilient once they're put into a challenging situation, as long as they have the right support. So part of Claims Consortium Group's approach has been to do exactly that, to look after the team. But we also launched a Love Our Community website. We actually shared that with clients, with competitors, and it's all around mental health, providing exercise tips, nutritional tips, things that I guess we all take for granted under normal circumstances, but some of that goes by the wayside when you're put into a challenging event, such as we've been in these last 5 months. So that's been at the front of our minds. We've also initiated welfare offices for our staff, both people that have obviously continued to work, and as a business, you know, as I mentioned earlier, we've adapted our resources to meet our claim volumes. So it has meant that some staff have been furloughed. And as part of that, we've clearly kept in communication with those people who've been furloughed and checked in with them just to see how they are, if they need any support from us during that time. So that for me has been absolutely key. I think learnings, certainly for the sales and account management team, again, I mentioned it earlier about the client communication, customer communication, and being so busy. We repurposed as a team very, very quickly, in a really positive way, and probably far more quickly than we would have thought we could have done before that situation happened. So that's a massive learning. I think, you know, if you set out to do something, you're probably only limited by your own sort of thoughts, actually, that, you know, there are no limits in terms of that. So we worked extremely well as a team. Probably one of the key points as the sales and account management team, obviously we're here to sell, we're here to manage client relationships, and part of adapting and repurposing has been around those services that we've spoken to our clients about. And clearly, you know, selling services that are your everyday services has not been the right thing for us for the last 5 months. It's been looking and adapting to see how we can support our clients. So we've been talking about slightly different services. A lot of that has been around the technology piece in adapting to how we resolve customer claims. So I think, it's been a really challenging time, but really positively in terms of some of the additional offerings and support that we have been able to provide to our clients. And I think that is, you know, is testament to the business as to how quickly we've been able to adapt to that. So, yeah, that's where I would finish on.
I think we are drawn to close, but one of the things that this, you know, makes me think and conclude just now is, first of all, we've had a great insight into the hard work that insurers are actually doing. And I think that's a really important issue for all the suppliers who have been through a really tough time as well, of course, to understand that we've seen insurers move with a fleet of foot we couldn't have imagined before, and the difficulties are still there. We haven't even touched on the financial challenges of a cost-driven purchase product at the moment. So it's been great to get that. From all three of you, I want to say thank you. I'm really, you know, not that it's important that I am, but I'm really impressed to hear all the stuff that you've done. And I think what you've just relayed in the last 40 minutes, but particularly in the last few episodes, I think it's a testament to you for what you've been able to do and how you've been able to lead people, which I think is phenomenal. It doesn't come as a surprise to me because you're known for it and your reputation, but absolutely fantastic advert for your businesses and what you're doing and how much you've done. It's very easy to sit outside and criticise, but as I've said before, for lots of people, the fleet of foot, has been absolutely tremendous. So, Connie, Jennifer, Heather, thank you very much for your contribution today. For all those listening, if you want to know more about ILC, if you want to get involved in our news or any of our broadcasts or events, please just drop me a note at alan@iloveclaims.com. If you're interested in becoming a corporate partner, looking at sponsorship, contact my colleague Nick. That's Nick without a K. So it's N-I-D, nick@iloveclaims.com. Thank you very much all for listening, and we look forward to speaking with you all again soon.
Bye. 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 Bye.